is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and editorial review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the origin of public school right after this. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. The remarks were apparently made by Swinton when this preeminent New York journalist, probably one night in 1880, Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. Swinton outraged all of his colleagues when he replied, "There is no such thing at this date of world history in America as an independent press. You know it and I know it. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things. And any one of you who would be so foolish as to write honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. If I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone." The business of the journalist is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. You know it, and I know it. And what folly is this toasting an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks, and they pull the strings. We dance. Our talents, our possibilities, our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Well, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and this New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. And let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order nightmare and the Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about this Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my free 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we've been reviewing the book Poison Drops in the Federal Senate by Zach Montgomery. And I showed you that clear back in 1886, when Montgomery wrote the book, that the four basic objectives of public school, that is to prevent crime, keep people off welfare, keep people from committing suicide, and to prevent mental illnesses, education. If we could just educate everybody, they wouldn't go crazy, commit suicide, get on welfare, or commit crimes. That's the theory behind public school, in case you had never heard before. Question arises, of course, well, why do we need to educate people? What difference does it make whether people can read or write or whether they're ignorant or not? And somebody will say, well, you know, we want people to fit into society. Well, you know, you need people to put down the cobblestones and to do the menial tasks and labors, don't you? And so we came to a conclusion in this country at some point in time, and we said universal education is a requirement. And it started clear back in ancient times, and it has to do with control of the society, control of the population. Adolf Hitler hit the nail on the head. He said, "You give me the youth, and I will control the state. Give me the youth and I will control the state." And that's exactly where we are in America today. Public education now has created the perfect socialist man in America to be manipulated by the state. And we practice secular humanism in the United States. That's our religion. It has replaced Christianity. And our public schools have outlawed and banished the Ten Commandments, God, and the Bible. And we've replaced that with the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto and the state. And we worship the state in this country. And, of course, there's been some very significant sociological changes. And, of course, the reactionaries reacting against this change are branded by the progressives as being the reactionaries that need to be expunged from society. And that's the way the game is played. Well, back in 1962, we took another big step. After Montgomery wrote his book in 1886, we went ahead and we did the public school trip. And I showed you last time that George Washington said, "There's no such thing as morality outside of religion. But you can't teach religion in public school because you've got all of these various and sundry ideologies out there." So we stumbled along from about 1900 through about 1950, doing the best we could to teach morality. We had the Bible, we had the Ten Commandments, we had the Sermon on the Mount in our public schools, or at least a lot of them. We had the Mormon people teaching morality in their Mormon public schools, and we had the Catholics teaching their morality in the Catholic public schools. And in various regions of the country, you know, we live down here in the Bible Belt. This is the Baptist Bible Belt down here in the South. And those people teach their brand of morality in their public schools. Well, starting around 1962, well, actually with Brown versus School Board in 1954, but particularly in the early 60s, we got on to a new kick. And this new kick was separation of church and state. It actually got its start in 1947 in a Texas case, but by 1962 it had kicked into high gear. And there's been a result. And a fellow by the name of David Barton, who is a kissing cousin to Zach Montgomery, wrote a book called America to Pray or Not to Pray. So now, with the information that we have from the 1850 to 1880 period, let's take a look at the 1960 to the 1990 period, and let's see if anything has changed. So here we are with America to Pray or Not to Pray, David Barton. In teacher competency testing, he says, "With the growing awareness of poor student performance, attention has begun to focus not only on the educational system in general, but on teachers in particular. Features such as the Dallas Times-Herald special report can be found in most major newspapers across the country." Now, here are the highlights. 20 states have acted to stem the flow of teachers who cannot spell, cannot add, and cannot punctuate by requiring competency testing for teachers. When the test was given last April to 1,269 juniors in Texas teacher education programs, 38% failed the exam, which tests basic skills taught by the 12th grade, such as calculating percentages, capitalizing words, and comprehending a 200-word passage. All right, second, the test was also given to 3,300 new teachers in the Houston Independent School District. Because of cheating and other irregularities, scores for only 2,400 of the teachers were reported. Almost two-thirds of those 2,400 teachers, 62%, failed the exam. And the Houston School Board later lowered the passing score so that only 44% of the teachers failed. So we're not going to educate the teachers. We're not going to require that these teachers meet a certain standard. If they can't meet the standard, we'll lower those standards until they can pass. Now, Montgomery pointed out the failings of the public school system. Do you remember that? And he said, the public school teacher has now taken the place of the parents in authority over the child. Do you really believe, honest to God now, boys and girls, do you believe that teachers who cheat and teachers who cannot pass the exam, the examination to become a teacher, should take the place of the parents in educating their children? So what we're saying in effect is we're going to hire a bunch of dumb teachers who don't have any morality because they're cheaters. And we're going to install them in place of the family head, the parents, and give them the power of educating the children. Well, what kind of children did you want to educate? What kind of children did you want to turn out? Cheaters and ignoramuses that can't do capitalization, comprehend a 200-word passage, or work percentages. Now, the Dallas school officials say that on the same test, 1,223 of the 2,280 teachers, that's about half, hired by the Dallas School District since 1979, 54% could not correctly answer 67% of the questions. So about half of the teachers could not answer two-thirds of the questions. And these are the people that we are installing in our public schools to take the authority away from the parents. So we've moved from parental education to centralized state education. And now the centralized state teachers, half of them, can't answer two-thirds of the questions on the tests that we administer to qualify them to replace the parents. Now, oftentimes I have parents tell me, oh, God, I could never educate my children. I'm just not educated well enough. Excuse me? How could you do worse? You mean you couldn't answer maybe three-fourths of the questions on the test? That's why I'm suspicious when I listen to public school advocates tell me that the public school system is superior in every way and that it's necessary and imperative to educate our children. All right, now in an effort to weed out the most incompetent teachers, 26 states have adopted teacher competency testing programs, although only 22 currently publish their results. While many observers believe that the teacher incompetency problem is not severe, what's happening in teacher testing prepared by the Department of Education presents a very different picture. In the states publicizing their competency testing results, 17% of the applicants failed. And since the average score required to pass the exam was only around 50%, it's a very generous statement to report that only 17% of the applicants are unqualified. Had the passing mark been raised above 50%, the percentage of unqualified or incompetent teachers would have risen significantly. I got to pause here for a moment, boys and girls, because when I went to public school, and I'm a public school kid, you had to score 70% to get a D-. I mean, to get the lowest possible grade possible, you had to be able to answer a little over two-thirds of the question, 70%. Now, they're telling us that the teachers only have to pass 50%. In other words, you're going to ask them 100 questions, and if they can answer 50 of them correctly, well, then that's good. That's good. That's the minimum now. So what we've done is we've dumbed down the teachers, who in turn are dumbing down the students. Now, since the Bible teaches that a student will become like his teacher, as we see in Luke 6, verse 40, it is appropriate to be concerned about teacher competency. And nearly 41 million students were enrolled in public schools in 1990. As of 2005, it's closer to 50 million. And if 17% of the students were taught by incompetent teachers, that translates into 7 million adversely affected students. Now, the biblical admonition that the student will become like his teacher is very sobering. Can we afford for 7 million students to become like their teachers, incompetent and ignorant? According to statistics made available during a White House briefing attended by the author in September of 1989, 700,000 students graduated from high school in June of 1986 who were unable to read their own diplomas after completing 12 years of formal education. The thought of releasing so many academically crippled students to take their place in the community, in business, and in the nation should be frightening to all of us. The weakening academic abilities of students has resulted in a 72% increase in the number of colleges and universities adding remedial courses to accommodate the lower skill levels of their entrants. Such a lowering of the course content will produce weaker degree programs, which will result in weaker college graduates, many of whom will re-enter the educational arena as teachers. This process is, in fact, what is occurring. Since 1973, the SAT scores of prospective teachers have fallen 55 points, and the Department of Education reports that half of the newly qualified mathematics, science, and English teachers are not qualified to teach these subjects. Now, let me repeat that, boys and girls. Half, 50%, of the newly qualified mathematics, science, and English teachers are not qualified to teach those subjects. Now, these are the statistics that come from our Department of Education. It's our government that's reporting to us that half of the teachers are unqualified. Now, how in the hell can you parents out there say that you can't teach your children in the biblically oriented and approved parental education system, which is what we used to have in this country before we adopted public education? We had what was known as parental education. That is, the parents educated their children. And the smarter parents would educate their children, and their children would be smarter than the dumber parents who would educate their children, and their children would be dumber than the students of the smarter parents. But in every case, parents had the duty to educate their children in the same way that they had the duty to feed and clothe them. And to educate your child to the best of your ability is your God-ordained duty. Now, we've come to the conclusion that, well, we're not competent or qualified, so we're going to send them to public school, 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto. And we're going to teach and train our children to become communists. I'm not really sure why that makes sense, but somehow in America, we believe in communism. Now, the communists are the people that stand in line and share the shortage, and somehow we Americans believe that we're going to reach nirvana, that we are going to reach the pinnacle of greater and greater economic success by following communism, which has never worked anywhere else in the world at any time in human history over the past 5,000 years, but somehow or another, we're going to make it work here. Now, these weaker teachers, in turn, produce weaker students, that in turn produce weaker degree programs in colleges and universities, that in turn produce weaker teachers, that in turn produce weaker students, that in turn produce... You getting the point? This is the deliberate dumbing down of America. And to produce this scenario on a continuing basis should be totally unacceptable. And yet this is what is currently occurring. And apparently, the people of America love it because they keep voting for more of it. Now, remember that Zach Montgomery pointed out that as we spend more and more money on public education, we get poorer and poorer results, higher and higher crime rates, higher and higher welfare rates, higher and higher suicide rates, and higher mental illness rates. That was the example from 1850 to 1880. He said, nothing has changed. And Barton confirms those facts. So does Yoder versus Wisconsin. Now, as they say down at the Blue Room, you know, read them and weep. Now, looking at dropouts from public school, in addition to declining academic achievement and increasing teacher incompetency, there is an alarmingly high dropout rate. The General Educational Development Test, called GED test, a high school equivalency test available since 1918 for those who did not graduate from high school, indicates the magnitude of the problem. School dropouts and the GED test. Since 1960, when we took the Bible out of our public schools, we find that the dropout rate from these same public schools has gone up significantly by about 700%. We have 7 times the dropout rate today than we did back in 1950. Why is that? You know, if public school is so good and education is so great, wouldn't you think that more and more people would want to go to more and more schools so that they could learn more and more? Or is it because schools are redundant, headed by incompetent teachers who cannot teach, which drive these students out of public school? They get tired of the redundancy, the nonsense, the foolishness, not to mention the crime that goes on in the public schools. Now, there's a new class of problems. For years, the standards for behavior, that is, the standards for right and wrong, were derived largely from religious teachings. And when those teachings were disallowed in 1962, they were replaced with value-free teachings, allowing students to discover and then set their own standards. And the results are evident. The lack of discipline and school violence are now the more troublesome problems facing America's schools. 14 of the 15 Gallup polls on schools during the 1968 to 1983 period cited lack of discipline as the primary problem. And before the ban on religious teachings and education, the top public school offenses were listed as talking, chewing gum, making noise, running in the halls, getting out of turn in line, wearing improper clothing, and not putting paper in the wastebaskets. Polls now list the top public school offenses as rape, number one, robbery, number two, assault, number three, burglary, number four, followed by arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism, vandalism, extortion, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, gang warfare, pregnancies, abortions, and venereal disease, in that order, from the Department of Education. Now, to suggest that violence in public schools has now become a significant problem is a mammoth understatement. News articles such as this one from the December 1986 Los Angeles Times have become commonplace across the nation. At most of the Oakland, California Unified School District's 92 schools, the fight against crime and violence is unending. An Uzi semi-automatic rifle with 15 hollow point bullets was among the weapons confiscated by district officials within the last year. Franklin Elementary School, trying to ensure that students know to hit the ground when bullets fly, carries out shooting drills twice a year. From the May 22, 1988 Fort Worth Telegram, school officials learned about the most recent sexual assault Friday after investigators talked to the 11-year-old victim. The sixth grade student was assaulted on 2 occasions at school while she waited for her parents to pick her up. The girl told investigators that 2 13-year-old boys raped her in the girls' restroom at school 2 weeks ago. On Thursday, one of the same boys and 3 of his friends returned to where she again was waiting. The girl told police that the boys took her back into the school against her will, and 2 of them raped her behind a stairwell while the other 2 watched, according to a police report. Now notice here that Zach Montgomery pointed out that crime increases in lockstep with the increase in public school funding. Now, in those days, we were funding public schools in the 1880s at the rate of about $15 per per student per year. Today it's $7,000 per student per year, average, nationwide, in our public schools. Now, that's quite an increase. Let's just take that and test it for a moment. There's 7,000 divided by 15. That's 466 times. That's 46,667% higher budget. Now, notice that even back in the days when Montgomery was complaining about public schools turn out criminals, he wasn't talking about rape in the public schools in the girls' bathrooms. But now we're talking about 17 crimes, rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism. Now notice that rape is number one on the list. Rape, number one on the list. Unheard of in the 1860s, as bad as public schools were. And notice that Montgomery was complaining about public schools and the criminal behavior that was created by this public education forum. And keep in mind now that we're not opposed to education. We're opposed to public education, criminal education, ungodly education, unscriptural education, communist education, socialist education is what we're arguing about. That's what we're complaining about. God Almighty Himself requires education. Compulsory education comes from the Bible, not from your legislature. But compulsory education in the law of God is a whole lot different than compulsory education in the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, boys and girls. Now, a 15-year-old girl told police that she was sexually assaulted on May 10th in an empty ROTC room. She named an 18-year-old student as her attacker. Another assault reportedly occurred on May 11th behind a stage curtain in a school auditorium, and the 16-year-old victim told police that she was held by two students while a third one raped her. The April 29th, 1987 New York Times carried this feature on Detroit schools. Now here's Detroit, Michigan. On the average, a child was shot every day in 1986, and the city canceled classes Monday and today to hold assemblies on youth violence. Just before spring break, a 14-year-old student firing a .357 Magnum pistol chased a star football player through the halls of Murray Wright High School. As others looked on helpless and in horror, the football player was killed by a bullet to the head. Two other students were wounded. Parents are demanding metal detectors and searches for weapons in the schools. Now look at the results. Look at the solution being promoted here. Should we use morality? Should we teach the Ten Commandments, like thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery, thou shalt do no murder? Or should we put metal detectors in the schools? And so, of course, the solution is, and you all know, that we're going to put metal detectors in the public schools. We're not going to put morality back there. Montgomery, remember, pointed out the problem with teaching morality in the public school is momentous, to say the least. And I would agree with that. That's why in the parental education forum or format, let me tell you a little story here. Back in the 1930s, Joe Toasty was on the school board of the Table Bluff School, a little rural school that probably was a one-room schoolhouse down at Table Bluff Light Station there in Humboldt County down around Lolita. And the farmers around there built that school. And, of course, they're all Portuguese and Italian, so they're all Catholics. And, of course, the farmers around there, none of them really wanted to serve on the school board, but, you know, five of them had to. So they would elect five, and then when those guys did their two-year duty, they'd say, well, I'm not going to run for school board. Hey, Frank, you run for school board. Joe, you run for school board. You know, it's your turn. So these farmers would take turns. There were probably 30, 40, 50 families down there, and probably had 100 kids or something like that, divided up into eight grades. And they had one teacher teaching these, you know, 50 to 100 kids. Now, of course, today they complain about these large classes. What the hell do you do with a teacher? I went to a one-room schoolhouse that had eight grades in it and one teacher. I think there was probably 60 kids in there. Teacher seemed to get by all right. and we didn't have any school shootings, and our teacher was competent. He could add and subtract and multiply and divide and do percentages. He could teach all of the grades from first to eighth. I know, it's a wild concept. Today you got teachers that can't even pass their tests, for crying out loud. And then we put those people in the public schools to teach. But anyway, out here at the Table Bluff Light School, guess what kind of teacher? What do you think the teacher's religion would be if you had Portuguese and Italian people sitting on the school board? Well, you guessed it. She was a Catholic. They would only hire a Catholic school teacher. Now, you got all these Catholic kids going to the local school. And hell, maybe there was two or three Protestants in there. I mean, there could have been. Old Hermann Slate, you know, was a German. He probably was a German Lutheran. And if he wanted his kid to go to the local school, you know, up the road here half a mile, then they're going to have a Catholic school teacher, and they're probably going to have Catholic prayers and Catholic this and Catholic that. And you know, if you don't like it, Herman, you can send your kid over to Fortuna to a private Lutheran school if you want to, or send her into, or send your kid into Eureka. They had a Lutheran school in there. When we had local schools and when we had local people, it may not have been good. And old Zach Montgomery pointed out these public schools weren't good back in 1880, but it was a hell of a lot better than what we've got today. You know, when you're measuring schools by rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, and vandalism and drug abuse. We got to take a break here. Hang on a second. Let me remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Remember, that's free. The number to call, 417-273-4967. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Reviewing the book Poison Drops in the Federal Senate, The Origin of Public Schools by Zach Montgomery. Now, to follow up on Montgomery's book, I picked up America to Pray or Not to Pray by David Barton. Let me give you his name and number. This guy is a pretty good, pretty level head. He's down in a place called Aledo, Texas. God knows where Aledo, Texas might be. But it's called Wall Builder Press. Post Office Box 397, Aledo, spelled A-L-E-D-O, Aledo, Texas, 76008. Last time I checked, this book was about $12. Hell, it's worth $30, $40, $50. You can't get the information anyplace else. That's why I say, this guy Barton has wrote a dynamite book, America to Pray or Not to Pray. They get a telephone number. It's 817-441-6044. 817-441-6044. Let me tell you a little bit more. From the chapter, Our Teachers, American Education, the call for weapon searches has reignited a debate that raged a few years ago when officials conducted random searches for a time, but then stopped after the ACLU sued in 1985. City officials said that they would resume weapon searches in the schools. "I'm tired of kids carrying guns like they used to take a lunch," said Mayor Coleman, or Mayor Coleman Young said. He used to be the mayor of Detroit. And in 1991, the Chicago Sun-Times reported a new security program that brought 150 police officers into the Chicago public schools resulted in an unprecedented 4,306 arrests in the first 4 months of this school year. Now, remember Zach Montgomery said, "Public school creates crime, it doesn't prevent it." Now, crime has gotten to the point where we now station the police in the public schools. And they catch 4,300 criminals. That is, you know, kids that can't shave yet. See, back in Montgomery's day in the 1880s, the children got out of the public schools and then started committing crimes and filled up our penitentiaries. Hell, today they arrest them right out of the public schools. The crimes are going on right there in public school. And, of course, we've raised that from $15 per student to $7,000 per student. Do you remember what Montgomery said? The more money you spend on public school, the more crime you'll get. The more money you spend on public school, the more welfare you'll get. The more money on public school, the more suicide and mental illness you're going to get. And that's precisely what we're seeing here. And Barton is reporting on it as recently as 1990. Now, police made nearly 14 times the number of drug arrests as had been made in the previous fall and nearly 12 times the weapons arrests. There were 1,122 arrests for disorderly conduct, 910 for battery, 738 for criminal trespass, 229 for alleged weapons violations. And I'm proud of the fact that we're taking action to reduce the level of violence in the schools, said George H. Sams, head of security for Chicago's 600 public schools. Now, who in his right mind, let me just ask you this, who in his right mind would send a child to public school knowing this? Public school is a place of crime. It's a place where you find rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, absenteeism. Would you send your child to camp in the summer, to summer camp, where the number one problem was rape, number two, robbery, number three, assault, number four, burglary, number five, arson, number six, bombings, number seven, murder, number eight, suicide, number nine, absenteeism, number 10, vandalism? You'd send your kid to summer camp with that kind of an environment? You send your children to public school every day. And that's precisely the environment. And that comes from the Department of Education. Hell, that's what they're admitting to. I'm not sure that that's the whole story. That's at least what they're admitting to. In December of 1985, the National Review reported that in New York City, in the first 4 months of the 1984-85 academic year, school security officers using spot checks were able to confiscate 1,000 weapons. 1,000 weapons. That was in 1 year in New York City. In 1984, 120 students were shot in Detroit schools. 120 students shot in the Detroit public school system in 1984. Hey, did you hear about that? I got to tell you a little story here. I was out in Phoenix, and I don't think that a lot of you people out here living like I do in the countryside hear about these stories. I was in Phoenix, Arizona for about, I guess 2 or 3 weeks. I forgot. I was teaching school out there, and so here I was teaching my classes. And every day there was a drive-by shooting. Well, for 14 consecutive days there was a drive-by shooting. I called home and I said, Dirk, are you reading about all of these drive-by shootings that are going on here in Phoenix? And he said, no, I haven't heard a word. Drive-by shootings are so common, ladies and gentlemen, they're not even reported. We had a murder here in Ozark County. Well, it wasn't quite a murder. It was almost a murder. This woman and her son tried to kill this guy, her husband, to collect his life insurance. They shot him about 7 times, and they didn't kill him. That's been the biggest thing that I can remember around here in Ozark County over the last 10 years. We had an attempted murder here. It happens once in a while. I'm out in Phoenix, Arizona. We have 14 drive-by shootings. That's where people just driving down the street put a gun out the car window and shoot somebody at random on the street corner. Unheard of. Now, I'll just bet you that every one of those students that are driving down the streets and shooting people out of their moving cars just at random all go to public school. Where in the hell did they learn that? Where are they learning this? Well, somebody's going to say, you can't say that because somebody goes to public school that he turns into a drive-by shooter. Well, I can certainly say this. Going to public school did not prevent him from becoming a drive-by shooter. And after all, that's the purpose, isn't it, of education? Now listen, how many homeschooled children, how many parochial school children who are being taught either by their parents in parental education or being taught in a parochial school, that is Catholic school, how many of those students go around shooting people at random on the street corners? I think the answer is zero. None. Now, what does that tell you about public school? I think that if you took a look at this list and you asked the principal or the teachers in parochial schools, what is your number one problem? Is it rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombings, murder, suicide, and absenteeism? Is that going on in your parochial school? I think they would answer, no, we don't have any rapes. I went to parochial school for 2 years. We didn't have a single rape, robbery, assault, burglary, arson, bombing, murder, suicide. There wasn't any absenteeism. See, when you go to parochial school, if you don't want to go there, you wouldn't pay the tuition. You wouldn't pay. You have to pay to go to parochial school. You know, people that are paying to go to parochial school don't cut class. People that are forced to go to public school against their will and over their objections will cut class anytime they get a chance. They don't want to be there. So why do you want to force these people to do something they don't want to do? And then they go to public school, they get bored to tears, and they start shooting people, raping people, robbing people, and they turn to crime. So in New York City, this is 1985, we're talking about 20 years ago now, 20 years ago. Do you think it's better today or worse today? 120 students shot in the Detroit schools. They don't even report it. I didn't know there was 120 students shot in 1984 in the Detroit public schools. Now you know. Why would you send your kid to a public school where they shoot 120? I guess the argument would be, well, they got 3 million kids in this public school system in Detroit, and they only killed 120, or only shot 120. So statistically, it's insignificant. I went to the public school system. I never heard of anybody taking a gun to school. I never heard of anybody. Everybody carried a knife. I never heard of a boy. Now, maybe there were some, you know, but all the boys carried pocket knives. I never heard of anybody pulling a pocket knife out there and killing somebody or cutting somebody or hurting somebody. And that's because even in the public school system back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s, there was still some semblance of morality and right and wrong and good and bad and wickedness and evil. Well, they took care of that in 1962, and that's what David Barton was pointing out in his book. I've got to point this out again. Let me plug his book, America to Pray or Not to Pray, David Barton. It's a dynamite book, Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, A-L-E-D-O, Texas, 76008. I would call this a 1 in 100 read. You can read 100 books, and you won't find one like this. I mean, you're going to go out here and read 100 books, and you're not going to find a book like America to Pray or Not to Pray. So I'm just telling you that it's a dynamite book. You got a phone number there. It's 817-441-6044. Again, that's 817-441-6044. Now, it's called Wall Builder Press. Now, I'll bet you if you went to the website, I mean, if you went to Google or somebody and you said, hey, plug in Wall Builder Press and see what we come up with, I'll bet you you'll find this address. So if you're driving down the street and you haven't got a pen and paper, and can you remember Wall Builder? Wall Builder. You know some guy that's putting bricks up, you know, building a wall? Wall Builder Press. If you could remember that, plug that into Google and I think you'll find it. During a five-month period in 1981, 100,000 incidents of violence were reported in California schools. Now, of course, California is a big state, 30 million people. This is 25 years ago, 1984. 100,000 incidents of violence were reported in California schools. How many incidents of violence were not reported? The 1978 Safe Schools Study by the National Institute of Education reported that the risk of violence to teenagers is greater in public schools than elsewhere. Only 17-19% of violent offenses against urban youths 12 to 15 occur in the street. 68% of the robberies, 50% of the assaults on youngsters of this age occur at school. Let me repeat that. Let me show you this again. Your chance of getting mugged, boys and girls, out on the street only occur 12 to 15. Only 17-19% of violent offenses against urban youths who are 12 to 15 years old. So if you're in the 7th to 9th grade, only about 15-20% occur out on the street. 68% of the robberies and 50% of the assaults on youngsters occur at school. An estimated 282,000 secondary school students reported that they were attacked at school in a typical one-month period. 282,000 high school students were attacked in any one-month period back in 1978, Safe School Study. Information from the National School Safety Center shows that in 1982-83, Boston Safe Schools Commission found nearly 4 out of 10 students were often fearful for their safety on school or in school or reported avoiding certain locations like corridors and restrooms. 3 out of 10 students admitted carrying weapons to school. Half of the teachers and 40% of the students had been victims of school robbery, assault, or larceny. Half of the teachers, 40% of the students were victims of crime in the public school system. Hell, even Montgomery wasn't reporting that the crimes were going on in the schools back in the 1880s. That occurred later. That occurred after we took God, the Ten Commandments, and the Bible out of school in 1962. You know, for every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. You know, when you do something, there's a result that comes from it. And that's what we're talking about here. You know, you throw God out of the schools, you throw morality out. George Washington made a very crafty observation when he said, you cannot divorce morality from religion. Now, if you leave the Mormons alone, just butt out and leave them alone, they will put Mormon teachers into their schools, and those Mormon teachers will teach Mormon religion to those Mormon kids in Salt Lake City. And the rest of you Catholics and Protestants and Jews that don't like that, move the hell out of Salt Lake City. Just move out. And I think you'll find that those Mormons will teach morality in their schools, and you'll have a lot less crime and a lot less problem. And you Baptists down in the South, if you just butt out of those Baptist lives and just leave those people in Texas alone and let them pray at their football games and let them bring in whatever their religious ideology is to their local public schools and let the Jews who object to these Christian prayers in the public schools, let those Jews go pick any school they want. Go to school any damn place you want. Public or private. If you just leave the Jews alone and let those Jews teach their morality to their people, their children, I think you'll have a whole lot less problem in life. It's what we used to do in this country. It's what our founding fathers envisioned until some do-gooder got up and said, hey, we got to have public schools. And so now you're putting all the Mormons and the Catholics and the Protestants and the Jews and all these people together in the same public school, being taught by sodomites, lesbians, and other atheists and agnostics and humanists. Hey, listen, let the agnostics and the humanists, let the sodomites teach their children. Huh? Wouldn't that just be great? All the sodomites and lesbians out there, let them teach their children their perversities. And I don't think it'll affect any of the rest of us. Last time I heard, the sodomites weren't producing many offspring. And let the Jews teach their children, and let the Mormons teach their children, and let the Baptists teach their children, and let people choose their own schools. And if you believe that the government has to pay for these schools, well, so be it, then we'll have to pay the tax to do that. But Zach Montgomery, I think, hit the nail right on the head. If you let people choose, they'll choose what's best for their children. You know, in general, there'll be some kooks out there that will not choose what's best for their children, but then butt out and leave them alone, and they'll butt out and leave you alone. That'll give you at least your right to free choice, which is more than you got today. Nobody's letting you choose today. Somebody out there is telling you where you're going to educate your child and what your child is going to learn, and it bugs you, doesn't it? You're probably not too happy with it. And probably a little fearful and timid that social lady is going to come out and knock on your door if you complain very loudly. Now, an article in the September 1990 Fort Worth Star-Telegram revealed the current trend in student fashions. Bulletproof back-to-school clothes are the latest thing for children who run a dangerous gauntlet to and from class. School blazers and other jackets fitted with bullet-resistant Kevlar 129 pads, added shielding from flying bullets, can be had from a bulletproof book, bag, or clipboard. They're offered by a former New York City police officer. Now let's think about this. Honest to God, boys and girls, would you rather teach the Ten Commandments and the Sermon on the Mount in your public schools in place of arming your kid with a bulletproof vest, metal detectors, and policemen patrolling the halls? You know, if I would have mentioned something like this, if I'd have read this story to you in 1950, you'd have hauled me away to the funny farm. Why, you'd have placed me in the Napa State Hospital, for crying out loud, for even bringing up such insanity. Today, it's commonplace. Common. Reported. Reported by the Department of Education, no less. Now let's take a look at student suicides. Remember, one of the reasons that we want to send children to public school is to prevent crime. Another one is suicide. Not only have students become violent in their interpersonal confrontations, they have become violent toward themselves. Suicides among youth 15 to 24 have increased 253% since the separation of religious principles, an average increase of 10% per year. Minimum estimates indicate that 400,000 adolescents attempt suicide every year, one every 80 seconds, and many estimates place the attempts at nearly 2 million per year, one every 15 seconds. In 1962, suicide ranked 12th in the cause of death among young people. In 1987, it ranked second. All right, so remember old Zach Montgomery made the same startling discovery. He compared the 1850 census, 1860, 1870, and 1880 census. He put the census figures together and he said, during this period when we have promoted the public school system over the parental education system, we have seen suicide double nationally. Double. And he said, we've seen crime multiply by four times, 400%. Now, here comes David Barton, and he takes a look at the public statistics, and he says, well, suicide, which ranked 12th in the cause of death among young people in 1962, suicide ranked 12th in the cause of death among young people in 1987. Now, 62 to 72 to 82, in 25 years, it had moved up from 12th to 2nd. And remember, public school, we send our children to public school to teach them not to commit suicide, not to get on welfare, not to commit crime. That's the purpose behind it. So, number one, we can definitely say the purpose for public school has failed totally. Unequivocal. I mean, you can't argue with these facts and figures now, can you? Now, I'll agree with you that a lot of people go to public school. I'm one of them. You know, I went to public school, and I haven't killed anybody yet, and I haven't robbed a bank yet. I'm educated, at least by the standards that the state sets down. Not everybody that goes to public school is going to come out of public school hating God or totally immoral or going out and raping people. I haven't raped anybody yet. Not yet. I always say the word yet because you never know what's going to happen in the future. But not yet. Now, when I went to public school, we still had some semblance of morality. Maybe not the kind of morality that Zach Montgomery was aspiring to in the 1880s, or that previous generations aspired to in 1780 or 1680, but we still had some semblance of right and wrong back in the 1940s and 50s. Today, I'm not so sure that we've got a whole lot of right and wrong going on in our public schools, and I think you ought to educate yourself as to what's going on in the public schools. And David Barton is a super good guy to go to get the information. So let me plug his book one more time, can I? It's called Wall Builder Press, and it's Post Office Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. The telephone number, 817-441-6044. Once more, that's Wall Builder Press, P.O. Box 397, Aledo, Texas, 76008. The telephone number, 817-441-6044. Now, the book is called America, To Pray or Not to Pray. A statistical look at what happened when religious principles were separated from public affairs, which is precisely what George Washington told us in his farewell address. I believe that's where that citation comes from. Washington said, you cannot divorce morality from religion. And you can't teach religion in the public schools. But if you let people practice parental education, if you just have to practice that 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, you just can't divorce yourself cold turkey from communism. If you would just add to your communist bent, 10th plank, public schools, free education for all children in public school. Just give parents the choice of where they want to send their child to school at public expense. Let the government pay for it. Let the parents choose the school. And I think you can eliminate about 90% of the problem. You won't get rid of all of it because you still got that public school influence. But, you know, you can eliminate about 90% of what's going on today. You can take things back and make them better. All right, Zach Montgomery, 1886. We'll be back with the concluding episode in the story of the origin of the public schools, and we'll take a look next time at the four laws that God gave us concerning compulsory education and what it was that God had in mind. You know, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What did he have in mind when he gave us that compulsory education law? All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the school direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, talking about public schools. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.